In other words, there is an opposition between matter and life. And this opposition has been resolved by nature by planting life into matter. Although matter and life are opposed to each other, when life is planted into matter, life is not denied. It's not rejected. Matter has absorbed the planting of life into it. The two opposites have met together in a plant. Isn't it? Every plant is an example of a contradiction which has been resolved, of an opposition that has been resolved. Because matter and life, they are opposite of each other. And they have been met together. Therefore, Sri Aurobindo, this is the first example. The first example of how nature has harmonized or synthesized matter and life. Now, Sri Aurobindo has explained, how do you say that matter and life are opposed to each other? Now, it is this portion which will answer this question. How do you say that matter and life are opposed to each other? What is the character of matter and what is the character of life? Matter is inert and life is active. So, accordance of active life in matter which is inert. Or even if there is activity in matter, the very nature of that activity is inert. Now there is second example Sri Aurobindo gives of opposition. Now this Anandmayi will answer this question.
The presence of conscious mind and conscious will, with one enlightening self, not already self-conscious, people at best in a mechanical or subconscious will. Another problem of opposites in which
this Excellent. So there is an opposition between life and mind. Why? Because life is, by its present nature, has something which is not in the mind, or mind has something which is not in the life. Which is that characteristic? Just as we found, in matter there is inertia, in life there is activity, dynamism. Therefore they were opposites. Now here, what is the opposition? What are the two elements? Yes, Mahi?
The mind is conscious.
Good.
And life is not
self-conscious. Very nice. There is opposition between consciousness and unconsciousness or subconsciousness. Life is only unconscious or subconscious. In any case, it is not self-conscious. Whereas mind is self-conscious. Not only conscious, but self-conscious. Therefore, there is an opposition. Now, you find that wherever there is mind, there is life. This is also a very important statement. Wherever there is mind, there is life. In our present composition, you cannot think if you are not breathing. Life manifests itself with breath, isn't it? Breathing is the first sign of life, according to us at present. Now you try, when you don't breathe, you will see it will affect your thinking. The minimum condition of thinking is life, is breathing. That is why those who want to make their mind very quiet, they do pranayama. They want to stop breathing, at least for a short time. It helps a great deal in quieting the mind. But normally, where there is no breathing, thinking does not occur. Therefore, Sri Aurobindo says there is an opposition between life which is unconscious or subconscious and mind which is conscious. But the nature has solved the problem of according to together in such a way that in that subconscious or in that unconscious movement of life, conscious activity has been planted. The opposition between the consciousness and the unconscious has been resolved by nature by planting consciousness in a field where there is vibration but there is no consciousness, or there is only subconsciousness. This is the opposition, and nature has already resolved this problem. Right? So there are two examples Sri Aurobindo gives. One is the example of accordance of active life in matter which is inert. That is the first opposition which nature has resolved. Not fully, but has resolved basically. And it will still going to resolve better and better in future. Then second is accordance of conscious mind in form of life which is
which is not self-conscious,
correct. So that is an opposition which nature has resolved. Alright, so we have now two examples in which two oppositions have been resolved by nature, at least in principle, if not fully. Now Sri Aurobindo says that now there is a third proposition. Yes.
No longer seeking the possessed of truth and light, with the practical omnipotence which would result from the possession of the direct and perfect knowledge.
Excellent. This is the third opposition. The present mind is a mind which labors to find out the truth, which seeks to find out the truth. This is the present condition of the mind. In that consciousness, now nature wants to plant another kind of consciousness which does not seek the truth but which is possessed of the truth and light automatically. Which does not need to seek but which possesses automatically within itself. So if nature has resolved two oppositions, it looks rational that this also will be accomplished. Sri Aurobindo uses the word rational, isn't it? Logical and rational. Now this also gives you an example of what is logical and what is rational. This whole argument is described by Sri Aurobindo as logical and rational. So when, this is another form of argument, we have earlier seen the logical argument, historical argument, dialectical argument, is essentially metaphysical argument. Now we have here this whole paragraph is a logical and rational argument. What is the form of this argument? If you find in some cases a certain kind of a pattern, then you can also imagine it would be rational to argue that here also there will be same kind of pattern. It is like Sherlock Holmes who finds a pattern in the way in which somebody has stealthily entered into a room. And you have discovered that pattern. Then you can now say that since this is the pattern which has been followed, in the next steps also, the one who has entered into the room stealthily has followed the same kind of pattern. This kind of an argument is a rational argument. You cannot say it is irrational. It's a rational argument. If one pattern has been followed up to a certain point, and if you say, therefore, in the second steps also, in the next steps also the same pattern has been followed, it will be a rational argument. But as yet not a conclusive argument. It's a rational argument, but as yet not a conclusive argument. Because it may be argued that, all right, as far as these two patterns are concerned, I agree. This also may be. It's rational. It's not irrational to suppose. But there may be another pattern. So it's not conclusive. It's not inevitable. All rational arguments are not conclusive. They are rational. They may be. It only proposes that what you are saying is not irrational. That is all. But when you say it is rational, therefore it doesn't follow. It must be therefore necessarily true. All rational arguments are not necessarily true. Therefore, having shown that this is rational, now Sri Aurobindo in the next paragraph takes us to another realm of argument.